It is time to talk some college basketball. I'm so excited to have Aki back on the program. He is now an assistant coach and the director of player personnel at my alma mater, the University of Maryland. You can follow Aki on Twitter at CoachAK40, the former Memphis Tiger assistant. Aki Collins joining us on the program. Coach, how are you?
I'm doing good. How's everything?
Man, it's fantastic. It's funny. I was looking up the resume, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. 2012 through 2015, you were in Memphis. 11 years ago, you left. It was like yesterday, Aki. We were just talking to you basically weekly on this program. 11 years have gone by. Time is flying.
And you're making me feel old, man. You're making me feel old, and it definitely is flying.
Well, you weren't old then, but maybe now. I don't know. I mean, this is absolutely crazy. From a personal standpoint, I mean, the life of a coach, it doesn't matter if you're in college, professional, whatever the sport may be. Man, oh, man, you have been in a number of places and now at my alma mater, but you rekindle an old relationship as you're coaching under Buzz Williams, who took over last year. You guys were together in Marquette, in Milwaukee at Marquette.
Correct. So when I left, I went to the NBA, then went to New Mexico for about 4 months, then went with Micah Shrewsbury to Penn State. Mike and I worked together at Marshall. When he decided to go to Notre Dame, I figured, you know, the college basketball thing was enough. My kids were growing up, and they were still in Atlanta. So I went, and I took over running Overtime Elite.
Right.
And I was comfortable down there, you know, down there 2 years. My boss lives in New York, so I live in Atlanta, so it's a great setup. And then I was in Maryland for an event, not this past November, the November before, and coach was still at Texas A&M, and he calls me at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I look at my phone, like, all right, why is Buzz calling me at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday? So I finally answer it, and he starts talking, and it speeds up into, hey, man, I need you to come to Texas A&M and be my GM. All right, coach, we'll talk about it. And this is November, December. We talk one more time. He's like, hey, I think I may get the Texas job, you know, would that interest you? And in my mind, I had no interest in doing either one because I knew my kids were going to stay in Atlanta, and I didn't want to be further than an hour and a half away from them by flight. He gets the Maryland job, and everything kind of spun out from there. So it's been adventurous. So we had a very rough season. I took the job in August, so the roster was already set. But I spent the entire year basically focusing on this portal season and high school recruiting. So I think we've done a pretty decent job so far.
You mentioned you were with the Thunder there for a while. And now being back into the college game. How close is today's college game to the NBA game with everything that's going on now in college basketball?
I think, and this is going to sound weird, but I think it's the NBA on steroids. and it was never supposed to be that. You know, at least in the NBA, when you're dealing with contracts and player acquisition, you know, you can lock guys in for 2 or 3, yeah, 4 or 5 years and not have to worry about it. And you can kind of build your roster from there because you know, all right, I got player A and player C locked in for multiple years. I just got to, you know, figure out what I'm doing with player B. Because of the portal, because of the regulations, you know, you change your roster yearly and monthly.
Right. Yeah.
So it's hard to really build. And, you know, we try to talk to kids about and agents about multi-year deals. And to their perspective, a lot of times it really doesn't make sense because, you know, if a kid has a good year, they can test the market and get the following year and make more money. Hopefully, if this 5-on-5 rule comes into play and you only have the one-time transfer exception, maybe you have a little bit more stability in building rosters over a 2- and 3-year period, but it's still going to be some upheaval.
Yeah, that's a great point. If they go to 5-for-5 and other things that they could implement, maybe it's more incentive for a player to sign a multi-year deal, but more than likely, they're going to want to test the market, as you said, Coach, and that makes it very hard on every single coach out there. I don't care if they're power conference coaches or not, to put together the rosters. Aki Collins, former Memphis Tiger assistant coach, joining us on the Sissy's Log Cabin guest line now at the University of Maryland. So you're an assistant coach and the director of player personnel. Do you guys have a general manager per se, or are you the GM, or how does the dynamics work in putting together your big board of portal guys that you're going to go after?
That's a really good story. So a question. So when Coach took the job, we didn't have an athletic director. And so it was a GM for all sports. And so Coach did not want to try to force a GM in because he didn't have a boss, essentially. So he asked me, he goes, listen, you're going to be the de facto GM. Is there another title that you would like until we could get this thing situated? And I said, all right, name me the director of player personnel. I'll do all the GM work. He goes, I know you don't really want to coach for me. I said, yeah, we've been down that road. We've had a lot of success, but you and I both will try to strangle each other at some point. So, yeah, this is kind of what I'm doing. And I had kind of started morphing into that when I was at Overtime. I did all the NIL stuff for us there. So it was the way I kind of wanted my career to proceed a little bit. So that's how I became the director of player personnel. He told me he had to name me an assistant so I could go on the road and recruit as well. So mm-hmm. That's how my title came to fruition. But I essentially do communicate with our GM. Like, I'll send him what our numbers are and have him write up the contracts and stuff. But negotiating it, getting the players and all that stuff falls on my lap.
So without having the AD, and then Buzz brings you in with this dual position, basically, but more so on the player acquisition side, how did you know, and how do you know what the budget is? And certainly you're not going to divulge that information, but if there was no AD, how did they know how much money they had to spend on players? And how hard is that?
We got an AD probably a week after
I
accepted the job.
Okay.
So he actually was down here with the Atlanta Braves, and so he took the job. And so he and I have a really good relationship.
Oh, wow.
I can call him or call his assistant and say, Chris, I need to talk to Mr. Smith. And he'll tell me this other day. He said, hey, he'll be ready at 1:45. Can you come over? I said, yes.
Yeah, but how good of a friend is he if you say, I need another million for the we'll see how good a friend he is.
We haven't had that conversation. He came over, we talked, and we talked about the roster. And he goes, you know what this means? I said, yes, we're going to have to raise some more money. Mm-hmm. And he goes, as long as you realize that. So he's worked with us. He's been really good. He understands that. So like, so we had a awful season by anybody's standards, especially Maryland standards. And so we have to be good, and he's given us the leeway and the flexibility to go out and do what we need to do to try to acquire the players that we need to be successful.
With that, you mentioned raising more money. How much of that, the money raising, falls on the coach's side of the you guys, and how much is it just at the AD and the athletic department level?
You know, I think there's a partnership. I've been to a number of events. I had to go to an event on the 13th up in New York, and it's just with boosters and things like that. Just giving people access can help raise money. They want to know what you're doing. They want to know what our team is looking like. They want some inside scoops that we can provide to them. And, you know, if they're going to invest into the program, we have to be willing to grant that access, and we've done that. Probably a little bit more than Coach is probably comfortable with. Like, he's really good in crowds and speaking to people, but like on his way to it, he'll complain about it. Like, I don't want to do this, I want to do this. And then you can't get him to be quiet. Like, Coach, we're supposed to be here at half an hour. We're here for 2 hours. So,
well, okay.
It's been a good experience, though.
All right, so let me ask you this again. I'm not asking about what Maryland's budget is. I'm asking you about what you think, and this is your, maybe you know, or just your opinion. How much money does it take to be up there right now with the Michigans, the Connecticuts, and the teams that are the perennial top five, top tens right now during this transfer portal NIL era? How much budget do you think to be that good do you need for a basketball program?
All right, I'm going to answer that in two parts.
Okay.
If you want to be the elite of the elite, it's a different number than what I'm getting ready to tell you.
Okay.
If you want to be in contention, top 20, you know, have a chance to make it the second weekend in the NCAA tournament, upset somebody and go a little bit further, if you're not spending $14 or $15 million, you're not in the conversation.
Whoa, man.
Yeah, and it was supposed, we thought it all was going to go down this year, and the prices have just gone out of the roof. You know, the team that won it this year, Michigan, reportedly spent $21 million on their roster last year. Now, to me, none of this makes sense, because I asked the football guy how much you had to spend just to be competitive in the Big Ten. And he told me $24
million. What?
The bare minimum. Okay? And so I'm like, okay, that's $14, $15 million on the basketball side. And you're talking easily $40-something million dollars a year for your two power sports on the men's side to be competitive and have a championship-level team. We can't continue going in this direction.
No.
There has to be some regulation. I don't know, like, I don't know where you get $40 million every year.
Yeah.
And if I did, trust me, I wouldn't be coaching.
Well, it seems like, Aki, it seems like that the schools that have the big booster/boosters that are willing to give them the big money, I'm talking about the oil magnates, and we saw what Texas Tech is doing, and it seems like if you have that Indiana and the connection with Cuban and all, it seems like if you have those guys in your pocket, then there's going to be that extra money on top of everything else you've raised to be able to do what you need to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, you know, they try to implement rules with the rev share. I don't think you can put a team together just on rev share. You have to do something else.
Yeah, I agree.
And to me, I think they just need to have, just like the NBA, a salary cap, and you can't go over it, whether it be rev share or a third party. Like, this is the number, and this is what it has to be. Now, you're going to have every agent in America trying to fight that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, on the collegiate side, agents aren't regulated. So, whereas in the NBA, the most they can get is 4% of a contract. You know, in college, I know guys are getting 10-20% on contracts, which, that's a whole other story.
So,
but they can do it. So,
mm-hmm. Right,
that's what you got going on right now.
You mentioned, you know, again, you've got to try and find this $40 million basically every year. When you are out there, as you said, trying to raise money, like, are the boosters, the people you're asking for some money, are they, like, frustrated by it? Or, like, well, seriously, like, how do you guys keep asking us for more? Or do they understand it? Like, what is the reaction you get when you're out there constantly trying to raise this money?
Well, for me, and I'm literally on the outside, on the peripheral, trying to assist us to get these dollars, I haven't faced much resistance, but it's our first year.
Yeah.
At least in my first year, essentially, doing this with the program. So, you know, the insight I can provide, I think, is welcome from our boosters. And I kind of stay away from asking for the big money. Yeah. Like, if I need to ask somebody for money, I will. But we have a team that does that. I just give them insight into what's going on with the basketball program. So far, I haven't faced much resistance. But I know I will probably face some resistance next year. But it also depends on what kind of season we have.
Yeah. Well, and it also, I mean, again, like, as you said, you think it's going to go down and then it goes up. And it's like, is it going to go up again next year? Like, where does it end? When does it finally peak and start maybe coming down a little bit or level off at least to where, okay, this is where we're at. And if it just keeps going up year after year after year, again, at some point, you just keep weeding more and more teams out.
And that part, and unfortunately, you know, the Olympic sports probably suffer first.
Sure, yes,
because
sure.
You have to pay and make sure men's, women's basketball are fine, and football obviously is taken care of. So, I think when people stop looking out for themselves and their daily money grab, and start looking at the health of college athletics, we'll be in a better place. I don't know if we'll ever get there. But I'm optimistic that at some point in time, somebody's going to step in and say, okay, enough is enough. Let's regulate this because we're getting ready to destroy it.
How?
The model can't stay the same.
No, it can't. There's no sustainability. I don't know. I don't see it imploding necessarily, but there's going to be some problems, some ramifications from it all. Aki Collins joining us. He's a coach and director of player personnel at the University of Maryland, former Memphis Tiger assistant coach. How crazy does it get, and this is just a general question, when you're recruiting or other coaches that you know are recruiting, and there are guys out there that were 2 point per game scorers, you know, 10th guy, 9th guy, off the bench, whatever, and they're demand, like, how outlandish does it get with the money they're demanding?
It gets crazy. I'll tell a quick story. One of our assistant coaches was talking to a kid and his representative. He kind of gave me an insight as to what they were looking for, but we had heard one number, and then it kind of fluctuated a little bit. So by the time I talked to the rep, he says to me, he goes, you know, we think his value is $1.5 million. So I kind of paused on the phone. I said, well, you and I have a different idea of what his value is. I said, this is what I can do, and I'll send you the documentation. You let me know if it suits you, and if not, you know, we'll go a different way. I sent him this. He said, thank you, and I never heard from him again. And I was perfectly fine with that. And I, you know, Coach and I, we're on the same page with all of this. And so when I found out their initial number, I knew I was going to say no, but I had already run it by a coach, and he goes, the value is what you think it is, and we're not going to go higher than that.
Did the player resurface somewhere else?
Yeah.
For that
money? He ended up going to a Big 12 school. I don't know how much he ended up getting, but for us, his value was a certain number, and we always have a walk-away number. Like, if they ask for too much, we'll just walk away.
Right. Makes sense.
And because part of it, like, Coach is still who he was when we worked together at Marquette. Like, he wants guys that want to be in the program for the right reason, want to get better. We have a track record of putting guys in the NBA. The 4 years we were together, we have 11 guys that have collected an NBA check off those 14.
Nice.
All right. So, like, I'm not saying we're walking in like we're, you know, big man on campus, but we do have a track record. And then he's put some guys in. I've had guys go in the league from my various stops. So if you want to come to the University of Maryland, we want you to value the experience, value the development. And obviously, we got to pay you. But if your number of reasons for coming to Maryland is that we have the biggest bag, what we do and how we do things, it probably not going to work for you. And so we stayed true to who we were prior to the bags being thrown around. And I think that's why we're having success in the portal right now and on the recruiting trail with high school kids.
It's funny because we actually was kind of joking about this the other day, but like when you, like, do kids on visits now, like, is it even, like, do they even tour facilities? Do they care what your facilities are, or just say, how much money do you have to give me?
You know, we have one of the newest practice facilities in the country just opened up in August, opened up a week after I took the job. And we kind of all joke about it, like, this may be the last one that's built, because kids don't care about that anymore. they care about the bag.
Where's your conference room? I don't care about the practice court. Where's the conference room where we could sit down and negotiate? That's all that matters. Absolutely. About your facility.
Yeah, I have a 17-year-old, just turned 17 on Monday. He's a junior, and then I got a 14-year-old, just turned 14, beginning of April. And I keep looking at them like, man, I need you guys to either get better or grow up faster. I don't be the guy that negotiates your NIL deal. Trust me. I'm going to make sure we all taken care of.
Oh, my gosh. Last thing before we let you go, and we thank you so much, Coach, for giving us some of your time. We know you're busy, but you spent a lot of years here, 3 years in Memphis, right? You know Memphis, and it has been last year was rough. A couple years ago was fine. Last year was rough. You know Penny, and it's not that easy anymore when Penny could just roll out his name. I mean, everybody wants to play for Penny, but now, like you said, show me the bag. How tough is it going to be for Memphis? You know they've tried to get into a power conference. They were shot down by the Big 12. Hopefully it'll happen one day. But how tough is it going to be for Memphis? I'm not talking about in equal value with the American Conference and other smaller conferences. I'm talking about to be up there – and battling the big boys, which they have done for many, many decades. How tough is it going to be moving forward?
Well, I think the challenge for Penny and his staff is most cities go through this, where the talent in the city runs in cycles. Anytime Memphis has been really, really good outside of the Calipari years, they had a lot of homegrown talent. And so when you have homegrown talent and then supplement it with one or two or three stars from outside, when you're at the University of Memphis, it makes it really makes it a lot easier to have success.
Mm-hmm.
My first year there with Josh, we had we probably had like 10 guys from Memphis. We had Chris, we had Joe, we had Tariq. You know, we had a core group, Adonis. We had a core group of Memphians, and so we were going to be good because there's pride in being a Tiger when you're from Memphis. I think. And it's not to take the pressure off of Penny. I think the more they get local kids that are elite players, the easier it's going to be for them to maintain their status or get back to that elite level.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's so hard at Memphis because of the conference that you can't go out and get 10 stars from all over the country.
Right.
It's just too hard because the playing field has now even look at the Blue Bloods. You got a lot of Blue Bloods that are struggling now because they relied on their name. Well, that name does nothing now when you can legally pay people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is not, I'm saying what I'm saying, and I'm not taking a shot. I've heard this, and it makes sense to me. At one point in time, the SEC was the premier conference. Now it's the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Why? We all know the rumors. What used to happen in the SEC. I'm not saying it did happen or it didn't happen. I'm just pointing out the fact that now the Big Ten is the best conference in college basketball and even in college football. So, for me, if I'm sitting in a chair at the University of Memphis, I'm meeting with all the high school coaches and the grassroots coaches and middle school coaches and trying to make sure that we're developing the homegrown talent, not just guys that are really good basketball players, are athletically talented. Like, we got to teach these kids how to play so that we can play at a high level and we can keep those kids home. And now we have a chance to get back mm-hmm. to national prominence.
Well said. He is he's fantastic. He's been around the game for a long time, and he knows the game. He's Aki Collins, Maryland assistant coach, director of player personnel, former Memphis Tiger assistant. Follow him on Twitter at CoachAK40. I'm so busy with the Tigers, but, man, I want to get back to Maryland and see a game. And if that happens, I'll look you up. And hopefully we can get to have you on again maybe during the season, Coach. Really appreciate it. Have a great summer.
Thank you. Let me know, and I'll get you tickets when you're in town, man.
Oh, sounds great, Coach. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, fellas.
Take care. Aki Collins joining us on the program.